part of every spiritual tradition is this idea of a felt sense of grace or faith or spirit or interdependence or connection or God. I mean, it really depends on your tradition. And that felt sense is what you are opening yourself up to and creating space for when you engage in meditation.
My friends, thank you for hanging out with me today for another episode of Cultivating Spiritual Curiosity. I want to also thank you for showing up and claiming your own spiritual growth. It takes a lot of courage and discipline, but you're here and I see you. Who you heard a minute ago is our guest today, Lisa Erickson. Now, when I started putting together season 3 and was brainstorming spiritual topics to talk about, meditation was at the top of my list. I think we can all agree that meditation and spirituality go hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. Meditation, though, goes so much deeper than just sitting on the cushion and trying to force thoughts out of your head. There's an actual science behind this traditionally woo-woo practice, and I needed to get to the bottom of it. This is where my overly analytical mind comes in, which is why I need meditation more than ever right now. My guess is you can benefit from it too, so let me give you a rundown on what you're going to learn today. Like I said, meditation is so much more than just sitting on a cushion and oming into infinity. There's actually something going on inside. So Lisa breaks down for us what is happening on a mental, physical, and spiritual level when we meditate. There are actually a lot of different types of meditations, including more active forms, which I know is getting some of you really excited if the thought of sitting on a pillow for 15 minutes is cringeworthy. Lisa explains what those are, and she shares with us her own personal favorite form of meditation, which I too happen to love. Lastly, we touch on how we can incorporate meditation into our daily habits so it becomes routine and a new way of living. You are listening to part 1 of a 2-part series with Lisa. The next episode will touch on the energy centers in our bodies, otherwise known as chakras, and how we can use our own energy to heal. I know, I'm excited for that one too. But in the meantime, let's dive into the foundation of spiritual awakening, meditation. Hi, my friend. I'm Sabrina, your host of the Cultivating Curiosity podcast. You're listening to season 3, which is focused on getting curious about spiritual evolution because us humans are ready to go beyond what our 5 senses can comprehend, beyond the logic and reasoning of our minds. We just need some guidance, which is where this podcast comes in. Every episode is inspired by my very own deep questions related to spiritual awakening. And my hope is through my own curiosity, both you and I will uncover an aspect of ourselves we always knew was there. It just needed to be awakened. Are you ready? Lisa, before we dive in, I want to hear your story. So you dedicate your life's work to teaching about meditation and energy healing and helping people overcome trauma through these modalities, which I love. That's so awesome. So what got you into this work in the first place?
Well, it was really a long journey. My introduction to meditation came soon after college, when I was experiencing stress headaches and stomach aches. Well, I didn't know they were stress headaches and stomach aches at the time. I was just having headaches and stomach aches. I was actually in New York City in a very demanding corporate job, which I thought I wanted. And I actually stayed in that field for many years. But it was kind of unusual at the time. There wasn't as much meditation around as there is now. But after a series of medical tests didn't turn anything up, I had a doctor who actually said, you might want to try meditation. I think some of this is stress-based. And I found a meditation class, and it turned out to be a chakra meditation class or energy center meditation class, which is just one of many kinds of meditation out there. But it introduced me to this idea of us having an energy body in addition to our physical body. And I studied that form of meditation, and it helped me a lot. And that eventually led me through my journey into energy healing and a switching careers.
Wow. So what was your career directly after college?
I was working in technology. I worked in the early days of computer science, and I started out as a programmer, and I stayed in that field for a while. I was in project management and data analysis and related fields.
Interesting. Wow. So your life really did take a big shift, not only career-wise, but now you're living, as opposed to New York City, in LA on the West Coast, which is so great. That's so cool. That's really interesting how something really hard in your life. So in your case, it was pain and suffering, and you found meditation through that adversity and through that struggle, and it ended up shifting your entire life. It's really phenomenal. And it kind of makes it a little bit worthwhile, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, and actually I had a second big change because although I was studying it for my own personal use for many years, and then also got into energy healing, which is a little different than meditation, I didn't make a career of it for a long time until the birth of my first daughter. And I had a health crisis after that, which led me to really research specifically women's energy body mappings and things like that. And so then I decided to start really focusing on this as a career. And that was about 16 years ago now.
Thank you for sharing your story and your backstory with us. I want to dive in now talking about meditation. I mean, we all know I've studied spiritual work for years, and a lot of people listening to this podcast are also into spiritual work and spiritual evolution. And meditation is at the heart of those teachings and practicings for a reason. And I really want to unpack that reason. So first, though, I think we need to establish the stigma that maybe surrounds meditation. And a lot of the time when the word meditation is mentioned, there's a group of people that think meditation is just sitting on a pillow, cross-legged, you know, sense infusing in the room, doing nothing. And the thought of sitting still and doing nothing probably seems ridiculous to someone who is working two jobs and going to school, or a single mom of three kids, for example. I mean, even for myself, I live a pretty busy life. And even though I know I need to meditate more consistently and I've tried, I'm usually filled with coffee or I'm in a work mode. I don't feel the desire to meditate when I actually do have the time to meditate. So to you, Lisa, you have this very deep connection with meditation. And I'm sure meditation means more to you than just sitting on a pillow cross-legged doing nothing. So what is your definition of meditation?
My definition of meditation is sitting with your own awareness and learning to work with it in whatever way you want, which is a little abstract. But what I really try is to accommodate all the different kinds of meditation that there are out there and all the different goals that someone might have. I mean, there's mindfulness meditation, which has been shown in so many studies to help someone with stress management in terms of helping someone practice being able to let go of challenging emotions and thoughts when they arise. You're sitting there practicing doing that, right? And there's walking mindfulness. There's sitting mindfulness focused on your breath. There's mindfulness practices where you focus on a picture that you like. There's a lot of different ways to relate to it. And those are not necessarily spiritually based. It's a practice for pulling your mind back over and over from where it goes by default. And that helps you be able to do that when you're about to get angry. You've practiced catching yourself and choosing a response rather than just reacting. That's what meditation helps you do, right? So that's stress management. That's anger management. It's also concentration and focus, which improves productivity and efficiency. So all of that, we could say it's health-based, it's wellness-based, it's emotional health. So it isn't just a spiritual practice. And then there are all these spiritual practices. But maybe we should start with the health ones first.
Yeah. That's a great idea. Let's start with the health, because there's so many questions related to this. I'm always a big fan of learning how science is related to the practices that I participate in. And starting with meditation, I mean, this was actually a question that my fiance wanted me to ask you today, because he's recently gotten into meditation and he wanted to know, how does meditation essentially rewire your brain? And that's something that you touched on, like meditation's great before you feel angry and explode, to go to that place of awareness. Like, what's going on in there to rewire your brain and cause you to act differently, go forward?
Well, it's interesting because different types of meditation actually rewire the brain differently. So that's why it is important to know, like, what's the most important thing to me. But that particular benefit is related to, as you're sitting, it's just like building a muscle. you're actually building up the parts of your brain that are self-aware, that it's like the same part of your brain that, you know, a two-year-old, when they're mad, they'll just hit their sibling, right? But generally, you know, over time, they develop that impulse control. And at a certain age, most of us are no longer hitting someone as soon as they make us mad, right? Not everyone, but most. That part of our brain is actually the same part of our brain that gets strengthened by even just sitting for 10 minutes a day, focusing on your breath. Because what you're really doing is your mind starts to wander, you're thinking about what you need to do, you pull it back. Then your mind wanders again, you pull it back. Every time you pull it back, you're actually strengthening the neural pathways for this part of our brain that regulates impulse control and self-awareness. So that part of your brain actually develops more neural activity and pathways. So you are, that then does translate into when you're in a real situation, you're more likely to be able to catch yourself when a stronger emotion or thought train overtakes you. So that's why it's helpful for stress management and in relation to counseling or psychotherapy or any sort of mental health issue or emotional pattern that we're working through.
Are you loving the stories and content being shared on this podcast? If so, I have some good news for you, my friend. I created a 14-lesson audio course that compiles the stories shared on this podcast. I'm not just retelling the stories, though. I am pulling golden nuggets of wisdom and tools from these stories that pertain to bettering your physical, mental, and spiritual health. I am a believer in balance, and I believe in order to live your best life, balance in these three areas is key because the mind, body, and spirit connection is real. Oh, and I almost forgot the best part. Each lesson in this course is no more than 10 minutes long, so it's an easy listen while you're taking the dog on a walk or finishing up some dishes. If you like listening to podcasts, I know you're going to like listening to this course. So what are you waiting for? Head to the show notes of this episode to access a direct link to my course on Listenable titled The Guide to Living Your Best Life, Mind, Body, and Spirit. Don't forget to use the code Sabrina Parati for 30% off. Happy listening. I want to talk about the types of meditation that don't require sitting on a meditation pillow, which I love that form of meditation. I think it might be the most popular form of meditation. I could be wrong, but I also love going outside and walking, and I love being active. And you mentioned walking meditation previously. What is walking meditation and how does that work?
Well, this activity that I just mentioned of practicing pulling your mind back to an anchor, you can do that in any form. You could do that walking. You could do that running. You could do that in yoga, right? Some people would say things like yoga and Tai Chi and these kinds of practices. It's built into it. You are bringing your mind back over and over to your body and your breath. So in that sense, many different practices qualify as mindfulness practice. A good one outside is that's kind of commonly taught in mindfulness courses actually is focusing on the different senses. So going for a walk and saying for the next 5 minutes, I'm going to notice everything I hear. And you'll be amazed by all the sounds that normally you don't even notice. The birds, the winds, the car two streets away, you know, the children playing on the playground on the other side of the park. And that is actually also building up. And then your mind will wander. You'll forget to do it. And you'll be thinking again about what you're going to have for dinner. And you pull your mind back to it, right? So that's what I mean by anchor. You can use your breath. You could use what you hear. You could use the feeling of your feet on the ground, which is another common one. Just keep bringing your awareness back to your feet. Whatever anchor you want to use, if you're pulling your mind back from distraction over and over, you're building up that muscle.
Interesting. I mean, I have found like, because I have anxiety, and I have found that sometimes when I need to just get out of those circling thoughts and that really anxious headspace, paying attention to my senses and what's going on around me, observe what I see, observe what I hear, observe what I feel. And that is truly the only way to get out of your head and back into your body. And I think for someone who suffers from anxiety or maybe can't sit still for 10 minutes and meditate in that form, doing something outside, like a walking meditation, and just observing what your five senses are pulling in from the environment. I mean, that's a beautiful way to ease anxiety and to essentially rewire your brain.
Yeah. And it's a common trauma mindfulness technique that is taught to people who are triggered in some way, right? Or that have chronic anxiety, is name three things you see right now. Name three things you hear right now. And it's that same idea, that you bring your mind into your senses and noticing, and it activates another part of your brain, which allows your nervous system to regulate.
That's the key. That's what I've been learning as I've been studying and on my own spiritual healing journey lately, is this whole concept of regulation and balancing. And that really is the key. And that's the beauty in meditation, is it helps you bring you back to stability, whether if you're in an angry state or an anxious state, you're just coming back to that stability and that balance.
Well, this may be crossing over into stuff we're going to talk about later, but because I work so much with the chakra system, which is the energy center system, that kind of sensory awareness is linked to the first or root chakra. And that's like the foundation. It's the foundation of the house. That has to be strong first before you can kind of work with any of the other energies. So this kind of mindfulness really is grounding and builds up that energetic foundation that's so important as well.
Oh, interesting. I am really excited to talk about that. I'm curious, Lisa, what is your favorite form of meditation?
It is chakra or kundalini-based meditation, because that's been my main practice for so many years. So that is more explicitly spiritual and technical in some ways, but I utilize other forms all the time.
So let's dive into the spiritual aspect of meditation. So we talked about the health aspect, the technical aspect, and I love that. And now I want to talk about how meditation allows us to connect on a deeper level with our spiritual self. So what is going on in this aspect when we meditate?
A common quote, which I've never found true attribution to, I'm not positive who said it. Many people claim to know who said it, but that, you know, prayer is talking to spirit or talking to God or talking to the universe, whatever word you use, and meditation is listening to spirit or God or the universe. So I love that idea, that you're trying to quiet down what you're usually thinking about or what usually is occupying your awareness to hear this quieter level of truth. I think the other way that I relate to meditation is it's about opening the doorways to direct experience, right? We have religious and spiritual teachings in terms of philosophy and theology and books that we read, realizations that occur in our intellectual mind. But part of every spiritual tradition is this idea of a felt sense of grace or faith or spirit or interdependence or connection or God. I mean, it really depends on your tradition. And that felt sense is what you are opening yourself up to and creating space for when you engage in meditation.
Oh gosh, I feel like that's the scariest though, right? Like a lot of people want to, including myself, run away from our emotions and our feelings. But I agree. I mean, once you feel that deep connection, it's a sense of knowing and understanding that you can't get out of a textbook or conceptually.
And that's why those, you know, the health-based meditation or mindfulness, that grounding is important, because it builds up this sense of, oh, okay, each of my thoughts or emotions come and go. There's something beyond them that is still there, right? And so in meditation, then you're trying to connect with that part of you that's always still there.
I want to dive into that because I do have some questions for you regarding thoughts coming and going in a moment, but I want to dive a little more into the spiritual aspect first. So can we talk about Kundalini meditation? Because I've practiced Kundalini. I did it back in college when I was studying abroad in Italy, and I lived in Florence, and down the street from our apartment, there was this adorable little yoga studio, and there was a Kundalini class, and I tried it, and it was unlike anything I'd ever done before, and I fell in love. And unfortunately, I haven't kept up with it since then, but I've always had this love for Kundalini. So for people that don't know what Kundalini is, or maybe someone who is familiar with the practice but wants to know more, can you dive into that process for us?
Well, in terms of our energy body, or this energy anatomy that we have in addition to our physical body, there are a few different energies that run through it. Some of them are really health-based. They're energies linked to our physical body, and those are used in energy medicine traditions, which include things like acupuncture, right? And many other herbal medicines that are based on balancing the energies in our body. But the other kind of energy is Kundalini, which is the personal growth or spiritual energy. It's linked to our awareness, and it's linked to our essential self, you could say, that's underneath there, somewhere underneath our different emotional patterns and mental constructs that have built up from our experiences. So through Kundalini practices, you're seeking to really bring this energy through the chakras, each of which represent different aspects of our psyche and different patterns. And you're trying to really free yourself of anything that's limiting or obstructing knowing yourself as spirit or light, I guess, is essentially what it is. And there's a lot of different Kundalini practices. Some are more focused on the heart and path of love, and some are very focused on the crown and kind of mystic states as the foundation for spiritual growth.
So going back to what you said earlier, you said that meditation is about listening and feeling. I don't know, maybe I'm trying too hard to think or to try to find an answer in my meditation practices. But what are those answers? What do they look like in the form of meditation? I'm sure it's not through the language that you and I are speaking right now. Like, how, say, if we pray and ask for an answer or some clarity or some peace, how does that usually come across, and how is that answered in the form of our meditation practice?
You know, I think it can appear for people in many different ways. The kind of classic idea is you have a vision, right? Or a voice. And that does happen sometimes. It does. You know, it's one way to receive information. But very often it's more like a shift that occurs emotionally and energetically. Maybe you suddenly just have a sense of release and a moment of peace. And what you feel is like, oh, this thing that I thought was such a big problem, all of a sudden in this moment, I have this release around it. You don't necessarily have an answer, do this and not that. But you have a spaciousness and a calm that then allows you to approach it in a new way. Sometimes that's what arises as an answer. So it's really about a shift in awareness. It could be a sense of calm. It could be a release of an anger or a resentment that lets a wave of love come in. It could be, yeah, it could really unfold in that kind of subtle way. Or it could be a vision or a voice. That certainly can happen.
That's awesome. I think the key is to receiving those answers is to maybe go in to your meditation practice not expecting an answer. Because I think that's where I get in the way of my own growth and my own healing is wanting it too much. Does that make sense?
What I like to do when I do have a question that's brewing is I do sort of send it into the universe with intention at the start of a meditation, but I don't expect to get the answer in meditation. I focus more on just like clearing myself out, because then once I get up, I'm more likely to be able to approach the question in a new way. And that's really where meditation is helpful. If you can let go of the fears around it, the angst, the expectations, what you want to be true or not be true, the hurt feelings. I mean, there's usually a lot of emotional things involved with difficult decisions, and meditation can help you kind of heal and let go of those, and then you have a clearer view.
So one of my biggest challenges when practicing meditation is doing it on a consistent basis. And I was actually talking with my fiance, Kyle, about this the other night. And I told him that when it comes to professional advancement, I have no problem writing out a goal list and a timeline and then cranking out those goals. But when it comes to my goal of meditating or practicing yoga on a consistent basis, time and time again, I fall off and I find myself going weeks without practicing just to be back to square one again. And I have a feeling, though, I'm not the only one. It seems like for some reason, I'm a type 3 achiever. Like, it's so much easier for me to achieve professional advancements. But when it comes to my own spiritual growth and advancement, I want it just as much, if not more, than my professional advancements. But it's harder to stay consistent with it. And so from your perspective and your experience, why is it so hard to maintain a consistent spiritual practice, specifically in relation to meditation?
I have kind of two answers to that. You know, there are things we can do to increase our ability to develop that habit, which really come out of habit development research in general, like meditate at the same time, same place, no judgment every day, that kind of thing, like building up this and this sense of a habit. And it takes about 12 weeks of willing your way through it, and it will become a habit that you'll do automatically. So there's that whole piece, how habit research develops. But the other piece of it is that our culture, and I think you really, you know, kind of pointed to this in your question, is our culture supports tangible achievements and accomplishments and rewards. And on a daily basis, meditation isn't necessarily something that has that, right? And so it's partially about looking inside, maybe even feeling into your body emotionally, a part of you that feels like it's a waste of time, and trying to consciously let that go. Or there can be resistances, there can be fears or anxieties around what might arise. So if someone finds that, like they think about meditation and some part of them is like, oh, I really don't want to do that. Well, then you need to mix it up a little bit, in my view, and really be like, well, what does feel good? Is it walking mindfulness, right? Is there something that feels good? So it's kind of two different answers, focusing in on what the blocks might be emotionally, and also creating the circumstances and the routine and willing your way through it. Just like if you were doing, say, an eating pattern change, it takes, you know, 12 weeks of consistency for your body to start wanting the healthier foods, right? It's the same with meditation. You have to give yourself time for that habit to really set in. And yeah, telling yourself the long-term benefits, right? Which are tangible.
Yeah, absolutely. So within that 12 weeks of building this habit, if I do the first week, for example, of just regular sit cross-legged meditating, but then one day I don't feel like doing that, and then I go outside and do a walking meditation, for example, or a kundalini meditation, is that still building the habit? I think I'm answering my own question of like every single day, at least being consistent with some form of meditation, even though it doesn't look the same.
I think so. Yeah. You know, it's interesting because some habit research seems to indicate that making the decision up front as to what you're going to do which days is better, because you're removing that decision factor. And then other research doesn't seem to support that. It's just about doing it at the same time and you can decide on the spot. So that's something to experiment with.
Yeah, I think the key is to just do some sort of meditation practice that tunes you into your self-awareness every day, whether it's kundalini or walking mindfulness. I mean, just doing something rather than nothing. Before we close on this meditation conversation, I want to talk about your book, because you are the author of the book called The Art and Science of Meditation, How to Deepen and Personalize Your Practice. And this is definitely the next read on my list. If COVID has taught me anything, it's been to read more. So I've been reading a lot, which is awesome. So I'm really excited to read your book. So what inspired you to write your book, and what is it about?
Yeah, this book is really for people that have dabbled in meditation, so it sounds perfect for you, and don't want to have to read 12 different books on 12 different topics, right? So each chapter is sort of offering some information that might be helpful to a meditator trying to take their practice to a new level. So there is a chapter on all the different forms of meditation and how each one impacts the brain. And then there's a chapter on what habit research tells us about developing a routine practice. And then there's chapters on the stages of meditation as they're laid out in both Buddhism and Hinduism, which are kind of the oldest, most well-documented, you could say, traditions of meditation, which can be interesting for someone even who doesn't meditate in those traditions, just to hear how those traditions categorize levels or states that you might experience, etc. So that's kind of how the book progresses, and then how you might want to do a retreat and how to structure that, or if you want a formal teacher, how to find that. So that's kind of how the book progresses.
That sounds really interesting, right up my alley. This question just popped in my head, but how has meditation changed your life? Because clearly it's a very big part of your life. You don't just do it as a hobby or a way of life. I mean, it is your career. You write books on it, you teach it, you study it. So how has it changed your life once you really started to incorporate meditation on a daily basis?
For me at this point, it really is the anchor of my moment-to-moment awareness in terms of kind of alignment, like what is true in a moment, what is just an emotional reaction, what do I want to bring to this moment in terms of compassion or wisdom, and having that as kind of my true north, you know, and that every day my meditation is me pointing my compass at my true north. And then during the day, I may get all turned around and I'm pointing the wrong direction and I'm getting irritated or I'm snapping at my kids or whatever. But that meditation always brings me back to pointing at that true north. So it just becomes this compass in your life, you know, that keeps you pointing in that direction you want to head and what you want to represent moment by moment.
I love that. That reminds me of something I actually just read in a book I'm reading called The Seat of the Soul by Gary Zukav. Have you read that book?
Yes, I have. Beautiful.
Oh my gosh. I have a funny story about this book. So I went to Barnes & Noble last weekend and I didn't even know this book existed. I didn't even know Gary Zukav existed. And it was just sitting on the shelf and it just drew me to it. It like spoke to me. And I picked it up and I just bought it. And after I got home, that's when I dove in and researched this book a little bit more. And I realized what a big deal this book was and how Oprah had him on his show like about 30 times and how he really opened up this whole conversation of the soul to the world. And it really is amazing. And so I just read a chapter, like one of his big lessons and teachings is setting an intention, a conscious intention. And that's what I hear that you're doing through your meditation practice is you're approaching your life with conscious, responsible intentions. And he says that's the fastest way for a soul to evolve and a soul to grow and learn and become wiser. And I think that's exactly what meditation is in a nutshell, is that conscious intention to evolve.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Cultivating Curiosity podcast. If you enjoyed it, can you please do your girl a favor and leave me a review? Also, don't forget to follow this show on your platform of choice so that you are the first to know when a new episode is released. Until next time, stay curious.